For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Is it just me, or did this week feel like it took a month to get to Friday here? But anyway, maybe that was just me. Here we are, finally made it to Friday. Got some big news yesterday when it comes to the U.S. economy. You know, President Biden keeps saying that, the economy is strong and the foundation is there and things are really going well. And then we find out that the economy as a whole actually shrunk in the first quarter of 2022. So, you know, it's kind of the opposite of what he's been saying. But what does that actually mean to us? I'm Mike Ferguson. Good morning. Just a little after 5:35. Appreciate you making News Talk STL part of your day. Right around 7:05 or so, our friend, Dr. Aaron Hedlund, former economic advisor to President Trump. He's now the chief economist with the Show Me Institute. He's going to join us, explain what all of these economic terms actually mean. So, you know what? All the spin masters and stuff can take a hike. We're just going to get a realistic look at what that means to you and your family, and also kind of get a look ahead as to what we can prepare for so that we can best financially protect our own families. Right now, though, let's revisit a conversation we had with former Congressman Bob Barr. You know, the CDC, the Department of Justice, they're really nervous. Not that people are not wearing masks anymore. They're worried about having their authority taken away to order you to take a mask when they feel like it, or to order you to wear a mask when they feel like it, even if they've never been elected to anything. Former Congressman Bob Barr, former federal prosecutor as well, had a really good take on that. And here's what you need to know. Here's that conversation. Couple big things that I want to kind of have a discussion about. It has to do with the scope of how far government gets into our lives, which obviously is a common theme on radio. But when you look at, for instance, recently, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, repeatedly now we've got the White House, we've got the director of the CDC, we've now got other members of the Biden administration basically saying we're not going to argue about whether or not you should wear a mask anymore. But they're pretty explicit in saying, yeah, it's really about just how far our authority goes. We're joined now by former Congressman Bob Barr, bobbarr.org, Liberty Guard, all things that you should be checking out. Great perspectives. Hey, Bob, it's great to talk to you again. The court case that was ruled that the federal government cannot continue to require masks on commercial flights or in public transportation. At this point, it just sounds to me like the conversation has shifted from, should we wear a mask or is it good about public health, versus the White House saying, wait a minute, we're worried that we won't be able to do this again someday. Where is the legal conversation about this? Because my feeling is a lot of people have just moved on. The virus has run its course. It does what it does. And now there are people in government who say, I'm worried about not being able to issue edicts and directives and controls again.
And Mike, that's precisely why the Biden administration, the CDC in particular, sent a letter last week to the Department of Justice saying, hey, you've got to appeal this. It really has very little, if anything, to do with the with COVID-19 per se, and it has, as you indicated, everything to do with government control. This whole pandemic, at least insofar as the government has handled it, governments, I should say, has all along been about two things. One, politics, and two, control. And of course, those two are interrelated. The Biden administration and Democrats in general are extremely worried that if, in fact, the decision by the federal judge in Florida stands unchallenged, then it will impact future rulemaking. Because what the CDC has done in this case is they just issued a rule last February with no legitimate lawful basis, without even having a single public hearing. They just decided to do it. There was never a legal basis for it, and now they've been shown to be the emperor with no clothes, and it worries the heck out of them.
Bob, I'm glad I'm able to connect with you on this, given your congressional experience and your experience as a federal prosecutor. Anthony Fauci was quoted as saying, this is a public health matter. The courts shouldn't, and I'm going to use his word, interfere in this. Is there an argument to say, but it's a public health crisis? We just can't wait for that pesky lawmaking process by the elected officials. Somebody needs to step in and protect the public health.
No, the laws in this country, even those that were passed decades ago under Democrats, set forth procedures, the Administrative Procedures Act, for example, that set out administrative procedures that must be followed. And the CDC did not do so. If, in fact, there was such an emergency that none of those regulatory steps were possible, then the CDC still did not have the authority under the law to do what they did. They should have gone back to the Congress, which, of course, last year was under Democrat control with a Democrat president, and they certainly would have been able to pass an amendment to the CDC legislation to allow them to do what they did. They didn't want to do that. They took the easy way, and now they're having to pay a price for it.
Bob, you write in your blog that the CDC's, I guess, authority wings needs to be clipped. CDC needs to have its regulatory wings clipped. What is the right and proper role for any of these administrative agencies, including the CDC, whether it's just advisory or whether it's regulatory? What should the CDC be doing and not doing?
I have no problem with having a CDC. Centers for Disease Control, emphasis on disease. The CDC, however, has gone far, far beyond its original mandate. It was set up in 1946, I believe it was, with a very specific purpose, Mike. It was set up to control malaria, which was endemic in the southern United States at the time after World War II. It did a tremendous job of that. But rather than say, okay, go back to Congress and say, okay, we've done our job, we don't need to hang around here, they kept going back to Congress over and over and over again, saying the public health requires us to get involved in all manner of stuff, including they were involved, they've been involved in bullying, obesity, traffic accidents, all having nothing to do with diseases. And of course, the mother of all of these irrelevant things for disease control is gun control they've been involved in now. What Congress needs to do is do what it should do, and that is to conduct oversight, pare back the CDC to do what it should be doing in this modern age, and that is maintaining accurate and comprehensive and current records on diseases. If, in fact, there is a disease that crops up, they should have the technical and do have the technical capability to deal with it. But they can and should not be allowed to keep going off and doing what they're doing. Plus, the fact it's duplicated by the Infectious Disease Authority over at the National Institutes for Health, where Dr. Fauci resides. So it's duplicative in large part of what at least one other federal agency is doing. Congress isn't doing its job as usual.
We're visiting with former Congressman Bob Barham. Bob, I've just got a couple minutes left here, but let me shift gears a little bit. Under President Biden, they have created the Department of Homeland Security's new kind of subset, the Disinformation Governance Board. And I got to tell you, that sounds, to a lot of people, including me, that sounds kind of Orwellian. What do you make of a federal government saying we're going to set up a Disinformation Governance Board?
It is Orwellian, and it fits exactly with what the Department of Defense is doing. Ever since Lloyd Austin took over at the Department of Defense a year and a half ago, he has made fighting so-called extremism in the ranks and fighting for wokeism basically his number one priority. The Department of Homeland Security is doing the same thing once again, and it's in conjunction with what social media is doing, and that is they're disguising censorship under under the guise of content moderation. It is very Orwellian, and hopefully Congress next year and a Republican control will stop it. But that remains to be seen.
We don't want people to have inaccurate information. I don't want people to lie. So why should we not have some sort of throttle or filter on it, just to play devil's advocate?
It's not the government's job. The government's job is to put out accurate information. It's people's responsibility to decide what is accurate in their lives, what they should be doing, and what they shouldn't be doing. And that's also why we have a free press. But it's not the government to tell people what they think is accurate and what they think is not accurate and provide a filter for it. That is directly contrary to the First Amendment, by the way.
All right, former Congressman Bob Barr, bobbarr.org. Liberty Guard, is libertyguard.com or .org?
Libertyguard.org.
All right, some really good thought-provoking blog and article and research in there as well. Check it out. Hey, Bob, great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for being on the program.
My pleasure, Mike. Take care.
We've got our news roundup coming your way in just about 4 minutes right here on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Okay, so many things right now in the area that have people really, really fired up. But a couple of really cool things that we're talking about as well. So, you know, here's the deal. On Fridays, I try to make sure we're going into the weekend with a smile. But, man, we've got some really important news that we've just got to talk about. And as always, want to know what you think about it. 314-912-1019. It is 548. I'm Mike Ferguson. That's Ken Williams. So here's what I've got my eye on today. We're going to get through all of these here throughout the morning. Biden administration sets up. I'm not making this up. I mean, it hit the news yesterday. We just talked about it with Bob Barr a little bit ago. A disinformation governance board.
Yeah, we need to remember that name, Mike.
Good God.
Disinformation governance board. Remember that name.
Yeah. So we are going to have a very robust discussion on that. By the way, and I mean this in all seriousness. If you say you conservatives are just freaking out over this is a good thing. Listen, I absolutely want to talk to you. I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to argue with you. But I really want to know why you would support this. Because to me, whether you are conservative or liberal, this should scare the hell out of you.
Yeah. I find it interesting that it's all happening just after Elon Musk takes over Twitter, mm-hmm. and Disney gets their hands slapped for being as woke and giving out their own disinformation.
Yeah. So we're going to get into that. I don't know what that was. Sorry about that.
Was that your pet next to you?
I guess it was. Get this. An area school caught pushing racial and ideological hatred in the form of a test question. Did you see this?
No.
Okay. I'm going to read you the test question. It actually popped up. I think a lot of people were talking about it on social media yesterday, but I didn't have confirmation that it was real.
Okay.
And so I got it now. And so it did happen in the Wentzville School District. I'm just going to read the question and what they say the right answer was on that.
Okay.
Also, again, here's really cool. St. Louis, once again, proving. Shouldn't even be a debate at this point that this is the best baseball town in America.
Oh.
Huge, huge milestone reached yesterday at Busch Stadium.
Okay.
Yep, for real. Not joking about that. All right. So this one, we're going to start about this Department of Justice. Well, Department of Homeland Security, I should say. Biden administration disinformation governance board. Really going to dive into that one head first at 6:20. But we don't. Here's the thing is we do know a little bit about it. But what's really frightening is what we don't know about it. Now, I'll get into that in just a second here, but let's take a look at the person who has been picked to lead this. Okay. And in case anybody thinks, well, it's just going to be something there that each administration is going to be able to manage. Yeah. Don't plan on that. The White House pick for the new Disinformation Governance Board is already attracting criticism for tweets that she's made about the president's son in 2020, talking about President Biden's son that she made in 2020. Fox News' David Spunt has the story. He's in Washington.
Nina Jankowicz, the global fellow at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. She actually recently left the Wilson Center, a nonpartisan think tank with an extensive foreign policy background. Critics specifically point to a past tweet regarding the president's son, Hunter Biden, under federal investigation. investigation for his overseas business dealings. The story picked up speed during the presidential debates of 2020, but were censored by several social media sites, including Twitter. In October 2020, Jankovic tweeted, "Back on the laptop from hell, apparently. Biden notes 50 former NatSec officials and 5 former CIA heads that believe the laptop is a Russian influence op. Trump says Russia, Russia, Russia."
And this disinformation governance board, according to Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, he says that, I'm just going to quote him here, his words, "The misinformation, disinformation governance board," in his words, "will be used to protect minorities from being misled by foreign countries attempting to disrupt U.S. elections."
Yeah, she also made statements. We're talking about Nina Jankowicz. Mm-hmm. She made statements about the Russian dossier at the time when it was being debunked by President Trump, and she said, "No, it's valid stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah,
it's good information."
Jeez.
So she's the head of this disinformation.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Wait a minute. Disinformation board,
governance board,
disinformation governance board.
So 620. Let's really get into that. And again, I mean this in all sincerity. If you say, "Good God, you conservatives want disinformation," listen, I want to hear from you. I want to know your perspective. I'm not going to yell at you, not going to call you names, but I really want to know. And I think everybody's listening to the show wants to know, what's the other perspective? How could anybody think this is a good idea? But listen, I'm not the only one with a perspective. I want to hear yours. So 620, we're going to start that conversation. What do you think about this? And I've got mixed feelings on it, but overall, I'm not wild about the idea of any state of Missouri, Illinois, both, looking at allowing food stamps, or what they now call SNAP, to be used at restaurants.
No.
To restaurants. Yeah.
I read that.
Yeah. And, you know, there are people who are, you know, angry that anybody would oppose this. The state Senate, with, you know, led by the more liberal Republicans, they've approved the plan with barely enough votes to allow the use of the, you know, welfare, the benefit programs, to be used at restaurants. Now, it doesn't mean that all restaurants would have to use it. So they wouldn't be able to go to some high-end steakhouse unless that steakhouse says, "Sure, we'll take the food stamps." But food at restaurants is more expensive than food at grocery stores, obviously.
Yeah.
And so there would be some requirements on the restaurants to, you know, offer food at cheaper prices. So if somebody goes in, they would maybe get a discount for using the food stamps. I don't like the idea. That's not what it's for.
I've fortunately never had to use food stamps, but I've had family members who have. Mm-hmm. And so there are good things about a temporary use of these food stamps. The problem we're running into, Mike, is there is too much of a generation of people,
right,
and actually now generations of people, who are using that as one of their primary sources of income, and they're using it to go to, now hopefully not, but fast food restaurants.
Well, and that's one of the things that's included, and that's likely where it would be used. So, you know, the food stamps would be go to Taco Bell and go to, you know, Lion's Choice and go to McDonald's. If you're the restaurant there, you pretty much are crazy if you don't take the money.
But one of the redeeming things about food stamps also is that it's WIC approved.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you can only get certified foods from the grocery store.
Right.
Okay. That was one of the things I thought, well, that's really good. Yeah. Then you get some healthy foods. No, fast foods. I want to see which piece of their chicken or burger is WIC approved.
Yeah, precisely. Most of those fast food places, it's not even real food.
No.
It's just like food like substances.
Right.
So I'm not, it sounds like you and I see it the same way. I am not wild about this, because that's not the purpose of what these for. These are supposed to be a temporary hand up, help up, and to focus on getting nutrition, particularly to children and
right.
families that are struggling financially. So we'll talk about it more throughout the morning. But yeah, I'm not wild about this, idea as well. Quick note, starting Sunday, this is interesting, for 2 weeks, at nighttime, there won't be any lights up on the arch.
Yeah, for like
2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's because it's migratory bird season, and so many species of birds use the Mississippi River. And this is actually really interesting to me. And I don't know whether they use the reflections of the stars or the moon or whatever, but they're worried about all those lights kind of disorienting the birds as they migrate. And so for 2 weeks, they're just going to shut it off and let the birds do what they do.
Now, I heard them promoting that and reporting on it, but apparently they've always done this.
Yeah.
And they do it in the fall as well.
Right, because the other direction. So you're driving, you know, in and out of the stadium for a game or whatever, and you're like, wait a minute, those cool lights, because, I mean, let's be honest, the Arch has got some really cool nighttime lights.
Yeah.
They go up. Those are for 2 weeks. Shut down, not going to see them. That's why.
I'm glad they're doing that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's just, I find that really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Also, okay, I got time to say a story. Bush Stadium, yesterday, big, big, big milestone. Now, let me preface this by saying Bush Stadium is nowhere near the largest stadium in Major League Baseball.
No, no.
By a long shot. I'd say it's one of the nicest.
Yeah.
I've been to a lot of stadiums. It's not one of the biggest. And St. Louis is what's considered a small market in Major League Baseball. Now, this current Busch Stadium, we're not talking about going back to Old Busch, not talking about going back to Sportsman Park. This current Busch Stadium welcomed its 50 millionth fan to see a Cardinals game, a yesterday's game.
Wow.
That's really cool.
What'd they get?
I don't know. I don't know if they got anything.
They should have.
They should have gotten something. Of course, they don't actually.
A golden plaque, and they should have gotten a really certified Cardinals T-shirt.
Season ticket, maybe?
Season ticket.
That's right.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, it's just like you pick somebody at random. You don't actually know who it is. But, you know, still, it was really cool.
They knew that on that day, somebody was going to be the 50 million, so they chose one.
Yep, exactly. So that's actually a really, really big deal. All right, still ahead here. Oh, man. How's that Bidenomics working out for you? Dan Bongino's got some thoughts on that you want to hear.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.